Hello and welcome. I'm Siobhan Sarna. You are in the right place at the right time to learn about how to have resilience when we are taking antibiotics. We have a very special guest. Dr. Sarah Ellis is with us. She is one of the ambassadors from Microbiome Labs, but unto herself, she's a beautiful family practice in Charleston, South Carolina. She is a naturopath with that incredible school, Bastyr. She specializes in family medicine, which I love, as well as women's health. She is passionate about herbalism and natural health, is not anti-antibiotics, by the way, because we all acknowledge that they can save your life. So it's really about educating ourselves and being smart. This is not a substitute for your doctor or medical consultation. This is information where we can all be empowered so we can make wise decisions in the context of our health and lives and move forward together. So welcome and hello, Dr. Ellis.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Siobhan.
Oh, I'm thrilled to work with you. I really am. When Kieran left Microbiome Labs and he's still going strong and doing great, I was like, how could anyone possibly help us? And of course, the speakers from Microbiome Labs, because of, you know, the foundational work and of course the brilliance of Kieran co-founding Microbiome Labs, you all have been spectacular. So thank you so much for rocking it.
And absolutely.
Forgive me for my hesitancy.
It's all good. Those are very big shoes to fill.
I know, right?
I totally understand. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. For those of you who have worked with Kieran Krishnan before, he is the co-founder of Microbiome Labs and has left it in very capable hands and has gone on to do other wonderful things. And he still will be part of our community into perpetuity for sure. But we do have a discount for you on Microbiome Labs. And Clarissa, I'm just going to ask you to get that right out of the way. You can pop it into the chat. So when you're hearing about some of the products, you can go there and order. It is an exclusive discount for us. I don't know how long it'll last. I keep saying that because I legitimately don't know how long it'll last. So have at it. And with that, Dr. Ellis, I'm going to hand things over to you to share your screen. Welcome.
All right. Thank you so much. Let me share my screen. Let me know if you can see it. I know it's loading.
Ooh, pretty. Yes. I can see it.
And then let me get in slideshow mode.
Yippers. And I will hide myself. And awesome. Wow, that is gorgeous.
Thank you. Okay. Can you all see the slides or do you see like the background details?
I see the like agate and then I see your title and I see Restore Flora on the right.
Awesome. My right. Okay, great. Awesome. Well, wonderful, everyone. I am also going to turn my camera off just to avoid any distractions for myself. And then I'll turn it back on. Oh, sorry, excuse me. Okay, can you all hear me well?
Start over because you muted yourself for some strange reason.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. Yeah, all right. I'm so happy to be here with you all today. I'm excited to share with you different ways that we can restore our microbiome after antibiotic therapy. We are going to be discussing, as soon as I get my slides working, we're going to be discussing today antibiotic use in the United States, how antibiotics actually impact overall health and specifically microbiome health, and the introducing Restore Flora, the ingredients, dosing, and supporting research. And I'm also going to take a moment to go through some of the strains of bacteria that are present in our product and how they help with the microbiome, especially the protective role that they play during and after antibiotic therapy. So to understand the need for a product to help with restoring the microbiome after antibiotic therapy, let's talk a little bit about antibiotic use in the United States. So annually, we know that far too many antibiotics are prescribed in the US. The CDC estimates that about 47 million antibiotic courses each year are prescribed for infections that actually don't need antibiotics. And that means that about 30% of the antibiotics that are prescribed are actually unnecessary. And this overprescription of antibiotics, there has been marked with a rise in antibiotic resistance in certain species of bacteria. In fact, in 2015, antibiotic-resistant pathogens were estimated to cause over 50,000 deaths a year in Europe and in the United States. And unfortunately, that number is expected to increase dramatically over the next 20 years. So let's talk about some of the common causes of acute antibiotic exposure. And that means these are common reasons that your primary care doctor would prescribe an antibiotic for a short period of time, usually anywhere from 7 to 14 days. Now, some of these are probably familiar, especially if you have children. Otitis media, which is an ear infection, very common in children. In fact, between 80 and 90% of all children will experience otitis media or an ear infection before they start school. Other reasons for prescribing antibiotics include upper respiratory infections, strep throat, UTIs, and GI infections. What's interesting is that, particularly as it pertains to children, high dose amoxicillin, which is about 80 to 90 milligrams per kilogram per day, is recommended as the first line antibiotic therapy in children with acute otitis media. So it's very common to have children have multiple rounds of antibiotics in their first few years of life. In addition, we will also talk about, let's talk about some of the common causes of long-term antibiotic exposure. And so these are conditions that may require a patient to be on antibiotics for a longer time, multiple months, even some for several years. And so we have, of course, a systemic infection or sepsis, prosthetic joint or prosthetic valve infections, particularly if you've had a heart valve surgery or any joint replacement surgeries, organ transplantation, splenectomy, and recurrent UTIs, which I know can be an issue for several people. So there are a couple of conditions, a number of conditions, some more severe than others, that can lead to you being prescribed antibiotics for a long period of time. So why is this important? Well, the use of antibiotics has definitely saved millions of lives over the last 100 years. And unfortunately, the overuse of antibiotics has been detrimental. And that's kind of what we're going to be focusing on this topic today. So broad spectrum antibiotics leads to a systemic effect. So it's going to impact the microbiome throughout the body, not just the gut. And so ideally, we would prefer to have an antibiotic that's more localized to avoid disrupting the gut ecology and ultimately leading towards dysbiosis. The research has shown that amoxicillin can cause changes that last 30 days to even 2 months after the antibiotic exposure. Other antibiotics like Cipro and Cefprazil have longer impacts, and sometimes that impact can be permanent. Now, common side effects with antibiotic use include, of course, antibiotic-associated diarrhea, which is one of the more common complaints after antibiotics. And then the overuse can cause a myriad of issues, including metabolic, immunological, and developmental disorders. In addition, the use of antibiotics can impact a variety of features in the gut. It can damage what's called our alpha diversity. Now, our alpha diversity refers to the total number of species in the microbiome. And when we lower the alpha diversity score, we are reducing the ecological stability and the resistance to pathogens. It also increases our susceptibility to infection and diarrhea, and can also cause damage to the intestinal barrier. It also increases our susceptibility for antibiotic resistance. It can lead to an increased risk of altered genetic expression And it can even lead to the bacteria being able to exchange antibiotic-resistant genes with each other. Antibiotics have also been found to alter mitochondrial gene expression, and it reduces the amount of active mitochondria in the cells. This leads to epithelial cell death and additional toxic effects. And unfortunately, the overuse of antibiotics has been associated with inappropriate immune activity, and that often shows up in the form of asthma, allergies, and autoimmune diabetes. I really enjoyed the schematic because it highlights the implications of antibiotic use throughout our lifetime. So as you can see here, we're going through age preconception all the way into your 70s. And we're going to be focusing on these red lines, these solid lines and dashed lines. The solid lines indicate that a single dose of antibiotics within this time period has been linked to a specific health consequence. Whereas this dotted line here indicates that multiple doses of antibiotics within this time period is required in order to see a link between this health consequence and the use of antibiotics. So let's walk through this. Anytime during birth, between birth and 1 year old, we have a couple of solid lines here. And that indicates that even just a single dose of antibiotics can increase their risk of childhood obesity. It increases the risk of infection and asthma, allergies, and autoimmune diabetes. And regardless of whether you are an infant or even an elder, any single use of antibiotics has been shown to cause a loss of microbial diversity, and it provides enrichment for resistant genes in the microbiome. Now, unfortunately, as we get older, our resistance and resilience improves, but the risk of infection after antibiotics does grow. So for example, in adulthood, this solid red line here that exists anywhere from 11 to 70, if you have a single dose of antibiotics during this time period, you are at an increased risk of infection from Clostridium difficile. Clostridium difficile is unfortunately a common culprit for many infections in hospitals and nursing homes, and has been a leading cause of colitis or inflammation in the colon, and can be an unfortunate cause of death as well. Now, this dotted line here, remember, this shows us that there needs to be multiple rounds of antibiotics in order to draw a link to this risk. And this risk is an increased risk of type 2 diabetes, and it has been associated with repeated use. So while we know that the use of antibiotics is very important, we want to be very conservative of when we use them, and use them only when necessary and through the entire course to ensure that we are protecting our health and our microbiome. And so here we have here we have some studies. In 5 out of 9 studies, some of these antibiotics, including penicillins and macrolides, were actually associated with reduced bifidobacteria in children. What we know is that amoxicillin exposure was associated with a complete disappearance of Bifidobacterium adolescentis. Now, this is a very important species of Bifidobacterium because it has been shown to create GABA, one of our calming neurotransmitters. In addition, 4 studies showed a decrease in lactobacillus for up to 12 months following exposure to penicillin, and up to 24 months following macrolide use. Now, macrolides are commonly prescribed for pneumonia, sinus infections, pharyngitis, as well as tonsillitis as well. We also saw that early antibiotic exposure is associated with a 3-fold increase in Clostridium, as we previously discussed with C. diff, within 6 months of exposure to macrolides. And then we also saw a reduced number of Clostridium clusters, which are inducers of T regulatory cells. Now, T regulatory cells are, they're considered the fire extinguishers of the immune system. And so they actually kind of dampen down the inflammation after the inflammatory cascade and process has been activated by pathogens. Now, what's really the most fascinating is that Akkermansia mucinophila completely disappeared with azithromycin use. Now, this is important because Akkermansia mucinophila is one of the most important bacteria for protecting the mucosal layer. It's very special in its ability to really rebuild the mucosal layer. And that's important because the mucosal layer is our last line of defense that protects that single layer of enterocytes from having direct contact with the pathogens. So now that we have a history about the use of antibiotics, some clinical examples of when these antibiotics would be used in an acute frame versus a long-term frame, let's talk a bit about its impact on the microbiome. So I want to use a simple analogy to kind of demonstrate the impact of antibiotics on the microbiome. Well, for one, we want our microbiome to be kind of like a rainforest. And we can see here, this is what our microbiome tends to look like before antibiotics. It's lush, there's a lot of species, a steady stream of nutrition, and just flourishing foliage. Now, during antibiotic therapy, unfortunately, many of these species are destroyed, and there aren't a lot of organisms living there. And here we see that represented as a barren desert. Now, after antibiotic therapy, the microbiome kind of looks like this. So the microbiome, it doesn't just bounce back to its lush and vibrant pre-antibiotic state on its own. Instead, it takes a lot of intent and focus to rebuild that microbiome and to get it to look like it did in that first picture. Now, a lot of the times, our microbiomes are left a lot worse than they were in the pre-antibiotic state. And we can see that here with these bricks. We have a few pieces of vegetation poking through, but we're still struggling with low diversity. And the species that are there can often be a bit more pathogenic and can lead to having a damaged, inflamed intestinal barrier and lead to leaky gut. In fact, we chose this picture because you can actually visualize the cracks in between these bricks as a leaky intestinal barrier, allowing things to poke through that really shouldn't. So here we see what a healthy microbiome looks like compared to a dysbiotic microbiome with leaky gut. And unfortunately, leaky gut is not uncommon to happen after antibiotic therapy. So here on the left, a healthy gut is one that has low levels of pathogens, a very strong and thick mucosal layer, low mucosal inflammation, and strong tight junctions. However, a dysbiotic gut, much like one after antibiotic use, we tend to see an overabundance of mucus degrading and toxin producing pathogens. We see a lot of LPS or lipopolysaccharide, one of the toxins produced by gram-negative bacteria. And then we also tend to see weakened tight junctions. We can see in the schematic as that mucosal layer begins to be degraded, and the pathogens begin to make contact with the enterocytes, those tight junctions that are intact over here begin to become weak, much like a fence with a broken gate. The door is left ajar. And so now these toxins and pathogens can make their way into circulation and activate the immune system, which leads to inflammation and definitely a difficult time for our patients and clients. So antibiotics are certainly a risk factor for developing dysbiosis and leaky gut, but it is important to note that there is a variety of additional risk factors that can compound the problem. And that includes, of course, prescription antibiotics, natural antimicrobials, pesticides, infections, excessive alcohol intake, smoking, stress, poor sleep, intense exercise, and a poor diet that tends to reflect the standard American diet and is generally rich in saturated fats. In fact, we can see here that dysbiosis risk factors can alter our core microbiome. So our microbiome generally consists of four major groups of bacteria: Bacteroidetes, Firmicutes or Firmicutes, depending on who you talk to, and proteobacteria, along with actinobacteria. Now, ideally, we would prefer to see equal amounts of Bacteroidetes and Firmicutes, or really having a bit more Bacteroidetes than Firmicutes. But this patient here, you can see, is struggling with a bit of dysbiosis because they have mostly Bacteroidetes with a decent chunk of Firmicutes. And then we have the proteobacteria and actinobacteria here. When we are able to visualize it in terms of percentiles, of course, our goal is to stay here in the green, but we can see that this patient has a pretty severe dysbiosis that's in need of restoration. In addition, as I mentioned earlier, antibiotics do impact the alpha diversity, or the number of species in this gut microbiome. These are screenshots from our BiomeFX functional microbiome analysis. And the alpha diversity, which is showing us that he has 98 species in their microbiome. And, you know, that's actually a bit low. We prefer to have a higher diversity because high diversity is usually associated with a healthy microbiome. And that's because competition between species ensures that no one microbe overgrows and creates an infection. Dysbiosis risk factors like antibiotics will decrease the overall diversity by eliminating or suppressing certain species, which reduces competition. And so here we can see that this level of species in the microbiome is a bit lower than our healthy range. And our goal here is to make sure that these four groups of bacteria are as balanced as possible. So again, dysbiosis risk factors change who is in the gut. And when the who changes, the what changes. And that is the what is was actually being produced in the gut. And so different species of bacteria carry out different functions and can be either helpful or harmful for us. And if there isn't competition, opportunistic and pathogenic species can overgrow. And as a result, we'll experience more of those harmful byproducts and less of the helpful ones. So let's look at the bacterial contributions. Our commensal bacteria, they are our good guys, our health-promoting bacteria. They will be in our gut making short-chain fatty acids, which are critical for a vibrant and strong microbiome. Vitamins, antioxidants, neurotransmitters, much like GABA, and they also help optimize the gut pH. Whereas opportunistic and pathogenic bacteria, much like the Clostridium difficile that we talked about earlier, they are going to make some products that increase the inflammation and toxicity in the gut. They'll make ammonia, hydrogen sulfide. You can always tell when a client has an overgrowth of a sulfate-reducing bacteria because their gas and stool tend to smell like rotten eggs. They also make methane, which we know leads to methane-dominant SIBO and can slow down the gastrointestinal tract and lead to constipation and worsening symptoms. And then also these pathogens can have toxins and virulence factors that make them even more difficult to eradicate. And then they often also make a toxin, an endotoxin called lipopolysaccharide, which is one of the leading causes of inflammation and internal inflammation in our bodies. So these are conditions in which we find gut dysbiosis. So gut dysbiosis does impact the microbiome and can lead to metabolic dysfunction, autoimmunity, a variety of skin conditions, nervous system conditions, hormone imbalances, liver health, and anxiety and depression. In fact, there are a number of studies that have linked anxiety and depression to antibiotic exposure. And in fact, antibiotic exposure has been associated with an increased risk in developing those mental health conditions. Now, we can't completely avoid dysbiosis risk factors. And, you know, most of our patients do experience chronic stress and sleep disturbances, but we're all exposed to environmental toxins, no matter how hard we try to avoid them. Many of us will unfortunately need a course of antibiotics. And, you know, I say unfortunately, but it's also fortunate that we have that tool to keep us healthy. But this is where forward-thinking practitioners really are working to address and reprogram that standard attempt to counteract the damage that is done to the microbiome during antibiotic therapy. Now, most of the time, this is done through what's called reseeding. And so that means, you know, we're taking these probiotics and we're just assuming that they're taking them and they're going to reach the gut and they will colonize and thrive. But we know that it doesn't exactly work like this. Here are some challenges with using probiotics. Commonly prescribed and traditional probiotics lack the ability to survive the gastric barrier and the gastric acid, and they cannot withstand antibiotic therapy. These single strain probiotics may have single effects, but they do not colonize the gut and don't have an effect on microbial diversity or short chain fatty acid. Now, it's often tempted to suggest what I kind of call the kitchen sink. So these are probiotics that have really high CFUs or colony forming units and a number of strains in the formulation, hoping that something in there will provide what the microbiome needs to be restored. Now, most of the probiotics are not designed to survive in an oxygenated environment during manufacturing. And so that impacts the efficacy and potency of the probiotics. Now, our focus and targeted therapy to preserving the microbiome is with the use of probiotics, but specifically spore biotics. Now, probiotics are defined as live microorganisms that, when administered, they provide a health benefit to us as host. Now, additionally, these sense and destroy probiotics, they actually can encode biomarkers, encode sensors for biomarkers from pathogenic strains. And so they're able to detect the pathogen and secrete natural antimicrobials to mitigate them and reduce them and help reduce the development of biofilms as well. So let's talk more about the solution. I'm excited today to tell you a bit more about our product, Restore Flora. Restore Flora is a wonderful blend of Bacillus subtilis HU58, Bacillus clausi, and Saccharomyces boulardii. It is effective in GI protection during antibiotic therapy and has been found to be very beneficial for treating and addressing antibiotic-associated diarrhea, foodborne illnesses, candida, H. pylori, and E. coli overgrowth. The ingredients in Restore Flora have been used in our industry and throughout healthcare for the past 30 years. It's also very useful and perfectly designed to be used alongside antibiotic therapy. It's a very unique blend. It has 2 billion CFUs, 1 billion for Bacillus subtilis, and 1 billion of Bacillus clausi. And it also has 5 billion colony-forming units of Saccharomyces boulardii. Now, this is a very unique blend because Saccharomyces boulardii is a commensal probiotic yeast. So this product is able to balance the bacterial community during and after antibiotic therapy. And at the same time, the Saccharomyces boulardii is able to balance the fungal communities in the microbiome for a more comprehensive restoration and balance post-antibiotic therapy. So this is a copy of the product label. Each label contains 21 capsules, which is a 14-day supply, or excuse me, this is 50 capsules. And we are, the suggested use is to take one capsule a day with a meal as directed, and for those who are aged 5 and up. Now, what's interesting is that the suggested use for Restore Flora, it is designed to be used alongside antibiotic therapy. And so the research that we've been able to find is that Bacillus clausii can be taken with or in between antibiotic doses. So you can take these while you're in the middle of antibiotic therapy. The capsules can be opened and sprinkled onto soft foods, into water, juice, or other non-carbonated beverages. So let's take a moment to talk about the ingredients that are in our product. Let's start with talking about that commensal yeast, the Saccharomyces boulardii. It has been used commercially for quite some time, over 30 years. It is resistant to gastric acidity. It's naturally resistant to antibiotics. It does not colonize the gut, and it reaches therapeutic concentrations within 3 days and is fully cleared from the GI tract in 3 to 5 days. A product containing only Saccharomyces boulardii does have limitations with regards to other probiotic functions, which is why we formulated Restore Flora to have a combination of the spores as well as Saccharomyces. Now, what's important is looking at the survivability data. Our survivability data showed that our strain survives in the stomach and in the duodenum. It can be administered with or without food, and concentrations in the stomach acid, you can see it remains stable from 30, 60, and 90 minutes post-ingestion. And then in the duodenum, we can see that there's good stability throughout, but we see that there's a slight drop towards the end that's really isn't as significant. Honestly, the most difficult part is getting through the gastric acid and the acidic stomach. So we know that if it can get through the stomach, it's going to get to the colon where it can do its magic on our microbiome. Now, common areas of research for Sac boulardii, really the purpose of this product was to curb antibiotic associated diarrhea by using it alongside antibiotic therapy. But there's a lot of ways that we can utilize SAC-B. Of course, antibiotic associated diarrhea, but also occasional diarrhea, traveler's diarrhea, if you have an H. pylori or Helicobacter pylori infection, Clostridium difficile, which we've talked about earlier, and often it is used to resolve infant and pediatric gut health concerns, as well as it's been shown to be safe and effective in patients with irritable bowel syndrome. So 5 to 25% of patients will experience diarrhea after a round of antibiotics. That bacteria can metabolize high molecular weight carbohydrates, and those populations are often diminished. Now, high molecular weight carbohydrates can actually accumulate in the colon and cause water to be pulled into the intestinal tract. Higher concentrations of bile acids can also cause an influx of different secretions that are linked to diarrhea. Now, diarrhea is occurring because the antibiotic is wiping out the bacteria whose job it is to consume those carbs. And so when they're gone, that causes a shift in the carbohydrates accumulation and causes and leads to diarrhea. In patients, this study here has shown us that it's been able to be used for the prevention and therapy for GI disorders. Now, there are a ton of studies that highlight the benefits of Saccharomyces boulardii, its properties, clinical efficacy, and its mechanisms of action, the ways in which it impacts our gut. And we can see that in the lumen, this is where Saccharomyces boulardii is able to have its most prominent antimicrobial activity. It prevents the growth of pathogenic organisms and reduces the translocation or the crossing of pathogens across that barrier and into circulation. It also has antitoxin effects. So it neutralizes and breaks down pathogenic toxins and even some of those virulence factors that are actually kind of cheat codes that help the bacteria evade the immune system and even can incorporate some antibiotic resistant genes so they aren't susceptible to the antibiotics. And lastly, Saccharomyces boulardii also provides crosstalk with normal microbiota. So it's able to reestablish a normal microbiome a bit faster than it would normally occur without it. And so now we're going to look at the trophic action. So Saccharomyces boulardii does act on the cells itself. And so it can reduce mucosal inflammation in the gut. It can enhance the enzymes that are secreted, and that can help prevent diarrhea. One great thing is that it restores normal levels of short chain fatty acids and is able to stabilize the GI barrier function and strengthens those tight junctions. What's interesting is that the reduction in the mucosal inflammation has actually been studied to reduce mucositis in cancer patients. It's also the enzymes that help break down those carbohydrates, help reduce the diarrhea. And so adding in the Saccharomyces boulardii provides a big part of healing from antibiotic therapy. And it really helps to nourish the microbiome back to a healthy and robust ecosystem. Now, as far as immune regulation goes, Saccharomyces boulardii does play a role in the innate immunity. So remember, our innate immune cells, those are kind of our first line of defense that are there to take care of any pathogens that are roaming around throughout our bodies. And so it's been shown to stimulate monocytes and granulocytes, much like neutrophils. And they help to stimulate the immune system so that it can take action, and especially when there are pathogens present. It also increases Kupffer cells in the liver. And these are really important for metabolizing and removing toxins. And that's a really fascinating way in which our microbiome can play a role in liver health. What's interesting is that Kupffer cells are resident liver macrophages. So there are liver immune cells, and they play a critical role in maintaining liver function. Now, under physiological conditions, they are the first innate immune cells and protect the liver from bacterial infection. Now, Saccharomyces boulardii also has an impact on our adaptive immunity. So this is kind of the reinforcement, the immune system's reinforcement. It can also enhance secretory IgA levels. And that has been shown to be increased pretty significantly, even in children. And so secretory IgA, IgA is a type of immunoglobulin, and secretory IgA specifically exists in our mucosal areas, so our gut, and often our nasal and sinus cavities as well. It's also able to stimulate T regulatory cells. Remember, I told you that these T reg cells are the immune system fire extinguishers. They're putting out the flames of inflammation to reduce inflammation and support the next stage of healing. And so they play a real important role in the prevention of autoimmune diseases, establishing immune tolerance. It reduces the development of allergies and most kinds of inflammation. And that's also due to its ability to reduce those pro-inflammatory cytokines. These cytokines are messaging molecules that alert the immune system that we are under attack, we need to prevent an infection, and they stimulate this whole cascade of activity that leads to immune activation and can also lead to tissue damage if it's not reined in. And so secreting IL-10, interleukin-10, which is an anti-inflammatory cytokine, offsets the activation of those pro-inflammatory cytokines. Now, this is a depiction of Saccharomyces boulardii's role in immune regulation, and this was provided from our supplier. So first, we're going to look at immunoglobulin levels, specifically secretory IgA and IgM, both of which are significantly increased in children with acute diarrhea and in mice who are administered, who were administered the C. diff toxin A. Now, we're able to see that Saccharomyces boulardii is able to help increase red and white blood cells, especially those macrophages that are really important for preventing infection. And actually, in vitro and in vivo studies, we're able to demonstrate that SACB can enhance anti-inflammatory cytokines and reduce pro-inflammatory cytokines, much like we just talked about in the previous slides. And it does all of this while inhibiting the host signaling pathways. So here we can see the significant increase of IgA, particularly those who have that C. diff toxin, its increase in red blood cells, and of course the anti-inflammatory cytokines. Now in 2007, there's a study on the immune system enhancement in children with acute gastroenteritis. 27 children aged 6 months to 10 years, they had acute diarrhea and were given Saccharomyces boulardii, which is administered twice a day and given placebo for about a week, or they were given the placebo for about a week. Now, the results after these 7 days, we see in comparison to baseline, we're actually able to see a significant increase in IgA levels. Remember, these are our immune globulins that are present in the GI tract. And we're also able to see a decrease in C-reactive protein, or CRP. That is a major marker of inflammation and one that physicians regularly rely on when investigating the resolution of certain symptoms. And then we also saw an increase in CD8 lymphocytes. So these are very, very important white blood cells that really play a role in our immune system activity. Now, all of this was significantly higher increase in the probiotic group compared to placebo on day 7. So now that we know how amazing Sac Boulardii is, let's take the last few moments to talk about those spores. So bacillus spores are known to have many advantages over other strains of probiotics in the market. For one, they are heat stable, no refrigeration is required, there is a 99.9% digestion survival rate. Fortunately, we can open up the capsule and mix into food and water, which provides a lot of variety for consumption.
Dr. Ellis, hi. I just want to interrupt you for just a second. So the spores, now you're talking about megaspore, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So
yes.
I just wanted to clarify that for everybody.
Thank you for that. So yes, that exactly.
Yeah,
the same bacillus spores that are in megaspore, they're also in Restore Flora. Megaspore has 5 of the spores and Restore Flora has 2 of them. One of the great thing about these spores is that they maintain their efficacy during antibiotic therapy. They produce 12 natural antibiotics and produce vitamins like vitamin K2-7, B vitamins, carotenoids, which are very, very important for antioxidant activity, and even digestive enzymes to help us better digest our food. Now, specifically for us, these are all the things that we have specifically for us. Bacillus subtilis HU58 is present both in Megaspore and in Restore Flora. This is the superstar that's able to make 12 different natural antibiotics. It's able to support immune function. It's one of the shining stars for making vitamin K2, which is incredibly important for calcium metabolism, bone health, nerve health, just so many benefits of vitamin K2. And it's also been shown to lower inflammatory IL-6 and TNF-alpha cytokines. So those are those pro-inflammatory cytokines that really drive that inflammation train. What's really great about Bacillus subtilis is that it's able to produce short-chain fatty acids, which keep our enterocytes and gut cells nice and healthy. So of course, let's look at a study on Bacillus subtilis and antibiotic-associated diarrhea. So researchers were able to randomize 60 patients who took Bacillus subtilis or a placebo for a whole week. The Bacillus subtilis group were able to have more well-formed stool, less stool frequency. And what's really, really fascinating is we were able to see a reduction in TNF-alpha by 55%. And this is a little bit of a typo. This interleukin was not decreased by 645%, but it reduced IL-6 by 45%. We also were able to look at specifically its stool consistency. So I'm a big fan of this Bristol stool chart because it can tell you exactly how your stool is reflecting your health. So it ranges from type 1 to type 7. Type 1 is generally constipation, and type 7 is entirely liquid stool as a reflection of diarrhea. And we're able to see here that by the end of the 15th day, the Bristol chart scores were actually able to decrease it. They started out at 7 at the baseline. And by the end of the 7th day, they were down to 4, having a normal bowel movement. And that persisted from the 7th day all the way to the 15th. And in the placebo group, we can see that they started with a 7. By the end of the 3rd day, they were down to a 6. But then by the time it got to the 7th and 15th days, they had gotten back up to the 7. And so they didn't see any much improvement in their stool consistency. So here we can see that Bacillus clausi, now that we've talked about Bacillus subtilis, let's talk about the second Bacillus spore that's present in Restore Flora, Bacillus clausi. Now, this is clinically shown to support immune function. Studies have demonstrated its reduced length of upper respiratory infections, and it also improves cytokine balance. So a little bit about our spores. In the late 1940s, Bacillus subtilis was isolated and used as a prescription store probiotic in Germany. Primarily, it was used to treat dysentery, chronic upper respiratory infections, and other immune dysfunctions in both children and adults. Now, before it was isolated and used in the prescription, during World War II, they noticed that more German soldiers were dying of dysentery than actually dying in battle. And they noticed that when the locals became ill, they would actually consume dried camel dung and they got better. So the Germans thought that this camel dung, they brought it back to the lab, and they were able to isolate Bacillus clausi. Now, that is what preempted the formulation of the prescription drug with Bacillus clausi.
Okay, I was not expecting the camel.
I know most folks are like, what does a camel have to do with anything? Yeah, very, very fascinating.
Dr. Ellis, how are we doing on timing? Because we only have 10 minutes left and we have questions. So
let's, right now this is showing the polyantibiotic resistance. So showing that Bacillus clausi is able to colonize in the presence of all of these antibiotics. Here are some cute graphs. And then this is my last slide. I just want to highlight some additional tools that can support the microbiome during antibiotic therapy. So lifestyle, if you're taking antibiotics, get outdoors. Not only is it great for our mind and our body, but we're also able to be exposed to different bacteria in the soil and outside. Improving your sleep, good sleep hygiene. During sleep, that's when our immune system can go in, clear out debris, take care of infections. So sleep is very important. Avoid exposure to harmful chemicals. Try to reduce your stress. And of course, cook our foods at appropriate temperatures. And then for diet, we want to have whole foods, fiber-rich fruits and veggies, omega-3s, fermented foods, and organic when possible. Here's my summary slide. So Restore Flora is a beautiful combination of spores and a commensal probiotic yeast. Its synergistic effects of each ingredient helps provide comprehensive effects that are important for restoring gut health. And we know that all three ingredients have been shown to reduce stool frequency and improve stool consistency. And here are my references, and thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing. Pop back up onto camera.
Yes, yes.
Thank you all. Please pop some love into the chat for Dr. Ellis. That was fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Woo, that's a lot. That is a lot. Yes. No, you did great. You did great. Thank you. So we only have, I'm not gonna be able to get to everybody's questions, but I am
apologize, everyone. No problem.
It was awesome. Let's see. I'm gonna just, this is like rapid fire, Dr. Ellis. So yes, how long would you take the Restore Flora 4? I know you talked about the dosage, but like, for example, someone saying I had antibiotic use as a child, I'm experiencing problems years later.
Yes.
Help now?
Definitely. It doesn't have to be during a current antibiotic or even a recent antibiotic course. If you had frequent antibiotics as a child, you can absolutely begin to restore your microbiome in adulthood. So Restore Flora would be a great first step.
And how long do you take Restore Flora for?
Yes, you can take, ideally, if you're doing it alongside antibiotic therapy, you can take it for 14 days, 2 caps a day. But if you are doing it post-antibiotic, so to cover a previous, earlier course, you can take 2 caps a day. And really, we decide on symptom resolution. So you can take it for about 30 days. And as you have symptom resolution, then you know when you can transition to Megaspore.
Okay, that's a good strategy. Yeah. NS, you have asked so many great questions in the Q&A, and I am not going to be able to get to all of them. So I hate to do this to you, but please pick one and resubmit it. No, so I'm going to, this is just NS who's in my, Q&A. Yes. You're fine. Let's see. How about nitrofurantoin?
Nitrofurantoin.
Okay, thank you for you guys. Could this work for that?
Yes, okay. It definitely can.
Is this true of IV antibiotics as well in terms of the timeline of effects?
Yes, however, with IV antibiotics, you may want to take Restore Flora for a while afterwards since there is going directly into the vein and rather than going to the gut. So
you're doing great. Tick bites are common where I live. How many weeks of doxy do you recommend for it before or after the 24-hour mark post bite? It's kind of a doctor's appointment question, but
I was just going to say,
why don't you just comment on, do you use doxy in your practice for the right patient?
Right. So in all honesty, I don't see a lot of Lyme in my practice, so I don't use a lot of doxy. However, I do have colleagues who specialize in Lyme. And it depends on the patient. Some patients really benefit from having that doxy to help bring down the inflammation and the bacterial infection. And others are just in such an inflamed state that doxy would just kind of take them over that edge. And so we do more restorative things before going straight to doxy.
Okay. Can you speak to the difference of fermented foods contributing to the microbiome and oral supplements? Kieran has mentioned something about fermented foods are not the same as. And, you know, sometimes fermented foods, if you have SIBO, you can't do them. Exactly. They cause headaches for certain people.
Yeah.
What are the strains in there? Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to address that quickly. Anything?
Yeah. That? So fermented foods are going to have more of like the naturally occurring bacteria that exist in those foods that help make lactobacillus. Generally, their lactobacillus species or bifido. Whereas supplements are, of course, prepared, commercially prepared, and have a bit less of the natural fluidity that comes with the fermented foods, with like kimchi and sauerkraut. So that's kind of like the minute foundational differences.
Okay. Yeah, Anne gets headaches from the kimchi. And Linda, I think we answered your question. I have recurrent Pseudomonas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Karina treated it multiple times with naturals. Any suggestion on how to retreat it? Dealing with resistance and can't tolerate Saccharomyces boulardii.
Pseudomonas can be very tricky. You said you've tried natural antimicrobials because my first go-to is, you know, the natural antimicrobials. But sometimes we have to go backwards. Sometimes we have to nourish the microbiome with changes to our diet, with adding sporobiotics. And then we kind of go in and do more localized impact, like addressing the mucosal layer, addressing the immune system. And so for Pseudomonas, and especially one that is a bit resistant, that may take a bit more heavy duty modalities at the same time. Sorry if I didn't answer your question.
Am I understanding correctly? This is a probiotic that you take permanently. Oh, this is not a probiotic to take permanently.
No, you do not have to take Restore Flora permanently. It's there to help balance and kind of shrink down the damage that antibiotics generally occur and cause in the microbiome, kind of blunting that damaging effect.
Ooh. And then Juliana, scroll up about 6 in the chat and you will see the code for Microbiome Labs. You have to register as a patient and it's easy, it's so fast. And then the code is NOBLOAT15 and that's only good for a little while, like a few days. Yeah. Okay, I'm going fast because we are running out of time. I saw that the studies were on both, some of them were in vitro, et cetera. Are all of the studies done on humans or are they mice or are they both? Thoughts?
There's a mix. There is a mix. So the last few studies that I shared on Bacillus and Saccharomyces were human studies, but we have a very broad mix of in vivo, in vitro, and human studies.
What would you suggest for a one-year-old with ongoing otitis media and repeated antibiotic use? Well, I think the Restore Flora. And what would be like, how do you start them when they're that young?
Yeah. So for a one-year-old, anecdotally, what we have been doing is we've been doing an eighth of a cap, a quarter of a cap into their juice or their purees. And then you also want to add in an immunoglobulin. So like our IgG 2000 to help bind up those toxins. And that's going to help reduce the damage that the pathogens are inflicting, not just on his gut, but also his ear as well.
Are the products gluten-free?
Yes, they are gluten-free.
Okay. Could you take the Restore Flora long-term with antibiotic therapy due to sepsis and heart valve infection?
You certainly can, especially if with the heart valve infections, you're more likely to have long-term antibiotic exposure. You certainly can.
In what circumstances would you recommend a patient megadose their Megaspore at how high a dose for how long without causing ancillary issues? That's such an individual question, but do you ever do megadosing of Megaspore?
I have heard of practitioners who do, but certain cases, they're either, you know, certain infections or really trying to move the needle in a certain infection or GI infection, sometimes SIBO or other infections. So I have heard of it being done, but I don't have the details in terms of how high of the dose of them.
Can you take Restore Flora with an antifungal since it is a yeast?
I would take it away. The antifungal won't hurt the spores, but it could damage the Saccharomyces boulardii. So I would take it away from the antifungal. Okay.
Which probiotics for sure seed, which ones may seed, and which ones do not have any chance of seeding the gut? I don't think they really seed the gut. They're more, I'm just going to tell it fast. They're more like mares and like neighborhood watch.
Exactly.
Okay, yes. Thank you. Yep. So it's not about reseeding. And the other thing that we talk about a lot is, you know, our forefathers and mothers would go out to the field, they would eat the carrot, they would eat the potato. And so they were constantly re-inoculating. And in our ultra clean, in quotes, environment for food, even though it's not all clean, I get that. you're not constantly inoculating. So exactly. I consider it part of my food. I have to go fast, you guys, because I'm really out of time. Any cardiovascular effects are found with antibiotic use?
You know, I would have to dig into the research on that. I've seen a few in terms of long-term antibiotic use and its impact on cardiovascular disease and cardiovascular function, but I would have to get back into the research to give you the exact details.
Let's see. Anita is asking more about the, Marianne, thanks for that. And Emily, great to have you. Is there any difference between the IV and oral antibiotics and the effects on the microbiome in early childhood? You kind of touched on that already.
Right. So the IV is definitely going to be more systemic. And so it's not just going to impact the gut microbiome, but we have a vaginal microbiome, oral, nasal, skin. Yeah. Exactly. So the IV is going to be significantly more systemic. You're going to have more side effects from the antibiotic rather than oral tends to be localized to the gut, but it can also affect other areas as well.
The person who was on 2.5 months of doxy 9 years ago that has terrible stomach issues ended up with horrible 24 hours of intense pain, vomiting, diarrhea, hospital. Mm-hmm. You were told never to have taken that much of an antibiotic. 9 years, you're still suffering. I'm so sorry. See my gastroenterologist regularly, limit dairy and gluten. That's just going to control symptoms, perhaps. Given Xifaxan for the third time over 18 months, I'm wondering why. Was it for SIBO? Are you on a prokinetic if it was? And if you've been on that many antibiotics, I'm just going to speak for myself from a fellow patient. I would definitely be on Restore Flora. Juliana is saying, you're saying that the email is incorrect. Can you email us or Clarissa, can you get the customer service for Microbiome Labs in the chat for Juliana? Okay. Any comments on that? I think.
Nope, you're all good.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah. Let's see. Mom in her mid-30s with a few children. All my friends give antibiotics to their kids for ear infections. Do you recommend the same to be safe or would mullein, M-U-L-L-E-I-N.
Oh, mullein root. Yeah.
And garlic oil be enough for the different ear infections, avoiding use of pharmaceutical antibiotics altogether?
I will say that I decide when to incorporate antibiotics based on symptoms. If your child is up all night with ear pain, crying, just cannot get comfortable, the antibiotics may be enough to calm down the symptoms. So then you can go back in and restore the microbiome. But if they're tugging at their ear a bit, they have a bit of a fever, but they're kind of okay. I'm a huge fan of the mullein root and garlic oil. I use it for my children. My mom tends to get ear infections. I give that to her. And it's a really great first step to use before going straight to antibiotics.
Okay. Guys, thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Ellis. You are a delight. They loved your voice. It was awesome. Just want to throw that out to you. And I wanted to say, please take advantage of the beautiful and generous, very generous, discount that Microbiome Labs gives us, because it's not, let me just say, not everyone gets it.
That's true. Very special.
thank you. And also, you'd normally have to go into a practitioner's office or be, you know, like get in through a practitioner in order to be able to receive, to be able to order anything from Microbiome Labs. I remember when I first wanted to get my Megaspore, I don't know, 6 years ago, I could not find it without having to go to a oh my gosh, what is going on? Did you guys just,
I was going to say, that's really cool.
That's cool. I did this earlier and it was like, I went like this and there were like fireworks. I don't know. AI is going, but anyway, I couldn't find it. And so when I finally met, Kieran and he and I started nerding out about the microbiome and biological dentistry and all that, and we were able to work something out for my community, I was just like, Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. And huge thank you to you for providing this education and information to everyone. Just I'm in love with your platform. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Mission accomplished. All right, everybody, take care and do take advantage of this lovely, lovely discount while we can. We're a little under the wire with it and also like a little under the radar. So okay. With that, we're going to go. Thank you, Dr. Ellis. I want to pop into another little chat with you just for a second.
Sounds
and
good.
Then, so Clarissa, can you send her the meeting link? I'm sorry. Okay. Thanks all. Take care. Bye.
Thanks everyone.
Bye. Thank you.